Let's see. I think this is how Ezra sets these things up. Got it. Oh, hey, Super Rika.
See?
Do you want to stay and do a podcast with me today?
No, I can't, puppy.
Well, how come?
I have to go to the hospital and visit Rashi.
Oh, yeah, he's still institutionalized. Well, give him my love and say we miss him, and I hope he's better soon.
See? Goodbye.
Wait a minute. What's that you're taking him?
A box of chocolates.
Is there anything else in there?
Yes, a gun. He asked for it. He said he would beat me if I didn't bring it to him.
Give me the gun. Thank you. Just a pellet gun, but still. Those monkeys. They'll drive me crazy. Hi, this is Almost Live with Paul and Misty on Radio Rashi with no Misty, but Paul, me, Paul Dini, I'm here alone. Nobody else is here, actually. Ezra couldn't make it, so I'm kind of recording this on an old tape player that I have myself from, you know, the cassette player days. I hope the sound quality is all right. Super Rika left because he has to go visit Rashi in the hospital. We had kind of a weird incident last week where over kind of our own better judgment, we took Super Rika and Rashi to see Planet of the Apes. And Super Rika enjoyed it fine. I enjoyed it fine. Misty loved it. Rashi, however, had a weird reaction to it. He actually went berserk in the middle of the movie and started rising in his seat and screaming, "I am Caesar, I am Caesar." And he has now fully gone over to the side of the apes. We couldn't control him during the movie screening. He was throwing things at the screen. He encouraged all other simians within the sound of his voice to join the revolt and kill all humans. He was screaming loudly when Buck the gorilla leapt for the helicopter. And if you haven't seen the movie, spoiler alert, and when Buck got shot, that's, I think, when we lost him. He just started screaming and crying and wailing and threatening revenge on humankind, and we had to pour out the rest of our gallon container of popcorn and stick him in there, and we took him off to the monkey asylum. We've been stopping in to see him daily, but he hasn't calmed down any. And putting him in a room with other monkeys may not be a good idea, considering what happened in Planet of the Apes. But it's sort of hard to watch him in his little straitjacket, but, you know, he is calming down gradually. So we hope to have him back with us next week. Anyway, so if you've not seen Planet of the Apes, it's a good picture. If you have a pet monkey or an ambulatory sock monkey like we have, I would not recommend taking him to see it, because it could have adverse reactions. So that's where we are today. And Misty is not here because she is rehearsing with Jonathan Pendragon, master magician Jonathan Pendragon, for a new show that they are debuting tonight at the Magic Castle, which will be a lot of fun. And I'll be leaving in a little while to go and see that. The show is really incredible. They've really thrown a lot of effort into it, and it's just, you know, amazing, as with everything they do. And she's also running around doing auditions, and she's doing a phenomenal amount of voiceover work. So we just don't have her today. So it's just me. Even the dogs are off in the sun or chasing squirrels or something. They're just, you know, nobody around here. Wait a minute. Hobart's here. You know, they wouldn't allow Hobart to go to the monkey hospital. So come on in, Hobart. Oh yeah, you want to do the podcast with me? Oh, okay, cool, great. We never have you here. Jump up here on the couch. Mm. Oh man, never knows what big claws this thing has. Well. Okay. Let's see. Well, what else can we do? You know what? As long as it's my birthday week, I'm gonna just indulge myself. I'm also gonna play a little music here. So we did a jukebox show a couple months ago, and people really liked that. So from time to time, I'm just gonna throw on a favorite song, and we'll rock out to that. What about you, Hobart? You have a favorite song? Oh, that one. You like that one, huh? Okay, all right. Oh, it's a classic, good old Bob Nolan song, "Sons of the Pioneers." We don't hear that one too much. Okay, here it is, Hobart's favorite.
Lone coyote whining, the setting are made. One silhouette, a sigh of regret, that's part of a heart and the start of a strange serenade.
That's a good one about your fellow canine. Well, you're not really a canine. It was sort of convergent evolution there, right? Yeah, yeah. The thylacines evolved to kind of fill the gap of wolves and coyotes in their natural environment. I think I read that in a book. Is that right? Oh, okay. Yeah, right. You read that same book? Oh, you ate that same book. Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, that explains all the ripped papers I found in my office. Okay, you know what else we do around the podcast? We take questions. So maybe we can answer some questions that have come in online. You want to do that? Okay. Questions from the fans! Dun, 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 dun. We don't have the music today, so I had to do the best we could. Oh, yeah? Well, that's what you think. All right. First question. All right. First question comes from OdeMonkey37, another monkey. What is your opinion on how Harley Quinn is portrayed on the cover of Suicide Squad number one? You know, I get that a lot. That's about her her appearance, where she's wearing the little brassiere and the tiny thong panties and the thigh-high boots. And oh, you like that, huh? Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's an opinion of one. That's one paw up for that. You know, the thing is, like Harley, like all comic characters, they all change their looks all the time, and I understand. You know, Harley's jester suit is a fun, kind of friendly costume that she's had for the last 20 years. But on the other hand, you know, we changed her look for Arkham Asylum and for Arkham City, so I don't mind a little variation now and then. You know, like I keep saying, I'll have to see how the character is written. If the character has changed drastically, then, you know, I might have something to say about it then. But for the way the character's look is, you know, those things never really go away. They're always sort of eternal. You know, like she'll always have the jester costume in the cartoons and the other shows that come out, you know, with her and the toys and the dolls and the merchandising that all has her in that outfit. You know, even I saw a clip of her, they're using the character in the Batman Live stage show in, or arena show that's going on in England currently. And again, they changed her look slightly. She still has the mask and she has the two-toned outfit, but they gave her like a little ballet skirt and they put her hair in the pigtails. So they did change her up a little bit, and it doesn't look bad. I think it fits the tone of the show. The show is kind of interesting. At first, I was going like, you're really gonna make a Batman circus? But it works really well. It does. Actually, they offered me the shot at writing it about 2 years ago, but I passed in favor of doing Arkham City and working on Tower Prep. So Alan Burnett, our good friend Alan Burnett, you remember him? Yep. And Stan Berkowitz worked on the script for that. And Alan Heinberg, I think, came in to do a rewrite on it. But so it's really good. I've seen clips of it. It's a lot of fun. And definitely if you've got kids, if you want to see like the classic version of Batman, kind of, you know, the comic book version, kind of the animated version, kind of just sort of the overall classic Batman on stage, this apparently is the show to see. Anyway, Harley's in that. Boy, I really got off subject there. We've got one here from Lan Pitts. How do I feel about Velma's interpretation on Mystery Inc.? I think we talked about this before, but I can't remember. Velma's interpretation on Mystery Inc. That's the new iteration of Scooby-Doo. Running on Cartoon Network. I think it's fine. I mean, I think they gave her... I mean, she still looks the same. She still looks like same old Velma and same kind of personality. I think they've paired her up with Shaggy now to give them kind of a relationship. So we've got Fred and Velma, and then we've got... Oh, you're right. Yeah, right. Okay. It's Fred and Daphne. How could I forget, right? Fred and Daphne and Shaggy and Velma. And I guess they're going off, you know, what was they always intended in the first couple of episodes. I remember hearing way back when Joe Barbera saying that each kid was supposed to be a couple, and that got abandoned really quickly because at the time they're doing Saturday morning cartoons, they really didn't want the characters to be anything more than walk-around cutouts. And they didn't have a lot of personality. But now... you know, because the characters are so iconic, I guess they feel they can stretch them a little bit and have them get involved. But boy, for decades there, those kids were just cartoon cutouts. I've seen a couple episodes of Mystery Inc. I think it's pretty good. I think Velma's fine. She'll always be fine. Okay, we got Sal Loria who asks, update on Madame Mirage's next tale? Yeah, I want to get back to that real soon. That's something I've been neglecting, and actually Misty and I have been working on those stories, and those have been coming out pretty good. I think that she did a few of the scripts for the second volume, and they came out really funny, really a lot of action and some really cool characters in there. So yeah, definitely we gotta kick ourselves and finish up the rest of them, and then we can get the artists working on them. So probably, long story short, probably, I don't know, sometime next year you'll see the next volume of Mirage's stories. Jeffrey Today, Jeffrey Adams, said, who would win in a fight, the original cast of Law and Order or a lion? Yeah, no kidding, a lion. He'd rip him to bits. Yeah, no, absolutely. There's no question there. Absolutely. You know what? While I run down the rest of these questions, let me put on another record, and we'll jump back to you in a second. What do we got here? Here's a good old Spade Cooley number that I like. We're doing a lot of Western numbers today. Yeah, I know, but I love them. Your silvery light. Okay, Moon Over Montana, an all-time favorite. Now, going back to the questions here. This is very apropos. Lee Webb asks, you talk about Australia and our animals a lot. Yeah, there you go. When are you coming back for a visit? Well, anytime I can get there. I don't get to Australia very often. I've been twice in my life, and I would love to go again. So, I don't know, probably sooner than later. It would be fun to go down there and actually spend a long time there, like 3 or 4 weeks, and really see the country. I've been around a lot of it, from up north to Darwin, out to the Great Barrier Reef, to Sydney and Tasmania and places like that. I really just loved it. It was great, and I would just love the chance to just sort of get in a camper and ramble around Australia and really see some of the far outback. And I want to do that whole drive from Sydney to Perth. I don't even think you can do a drive. I think it's all desert. I think there's a train that goes there. But, you know, I really do like it. And I found the people very friendly and very warm and fun to talk to. And the animal life is incredible. You know, the mammals and the marsupials are great. And everything else will kill you. Like the insects, the snakes, the crocodiles, of course. And you don't go swimming because the jellyfish will get you. But other than that, it's just fantastic. Actually, I did have a good time diving off the Great Barrier Reef. That was amazing. That was everything they said it was, with the fish and everything. So, yeah, definitely. Next long vacation I get, I think we'll pack everybody up and head down to Australia. You want to go? No? How come? Oh, too many bad memories, huh? All right, okay, well, you can just hang out here with the Boston Terriers. You get along with them, okay. All right, Lobster Justin says... No, that's a person. That's not something you eat. Lobster Justin says, who would win in a fight, Godzilla or Gamera? That's a good one. You know, Gamera has a sympathy for sympathy thing going for him, because he actually likes kids and he sort of acknowledges humans and he kind of likes them, and he's a turtle, and turtles are sort of like friendlier than dragons or whatever the hell Godzilla's supposed to be. But Godzilla's the man, you know, or he's just the big bad, you know, nothing can stand against him. So I think what would probably happen is we'd do a Marvel Comics cop-out on these. Like, we'd fight and they each take their lumps, and Gamera would really be giving it to Godzilla, and Godzilla would pull a few dirty moves and really get it in on Gamera, and then we'd find out they were manipulated to fight by King Ghidorah. And then they'd both team up and they'd kick his three-headed ass back to outer space. And then they'd part sort of as friends or friendly allies or non-enemies, or they were just too tired to fight with each other. I think it would be a draw. So I'm gonna wimp out with that one. Let's see. Huh? I'm King Caesar. King Caesar's fine, yeah, but you know, he's a big dog. Okay, all right, I know, you like big dogs, all right. Yeah, okay, King Caesar's fine, he's just a little kind of fluffy, you know, for the great pantheon. Okay, all right, that's your opinion, all right, okay, King Caesar rules, that's fine. All right, Dan Bauman Bass asks, why haven't you been knighted for your work on Batman? That's what I want to know. What's up with that bitch, the queen? I mean, I keep writing letters. I keep going over there. Every time I'm doing the game, I keep knocking at the palace. Some guy with a rug on his hat, rug for a hat, comes out and shoos me away. I've sent letters. I've sent flowers. I sent a box of Godiva chocolates. I don't know what else I can do to make that old witch acknowledge me for, you know, recognize, lady, recognize. These are good cartoons here. You gave one to Jagger? Mick Jagger? For what? Getting stoned? Jesus. I mean, you know, okay, can sing a little bit, but that's fine. You know, it's like, you know, come on, Batman. Yeah, I know I'm not English. I mean, Batman is universal. He transcends all borders. Who else is she going to give it to? Morrison? Alan Moore? Are you shitting me? Get out. Get out. Go. They probably will get it before I do. They are British citizens. God, that shouldn't even count. I want another song.
Now there's a Sergeant Major, enjoys life while he can. He proves to all the ladies he's a soldier and a man. He sticks out his chest, two pillars in his vest, a bolster under his rotunda, our Sergeant Major. His medals break our hearts, he won them playing darts. And while competing, who was cheating? Our Sergeant Major. He's far away the worst friend we've ever had. When he's far away, well, we're mighty glad. In the canteen bar, you know what sergeants are. When we've passed out, who's the last out? Our Sergeant Major. He's got a raucous voice, his language isn't choice. In clink we'd shove him, how we love him. Our Sergeant Major, his weight about he'll throw the wicked so-and-so, who'd even smother his own mother. Our Sergeant Major is far away the worst friend we've ever had. When he's far away, well, we're mighty glad. Our bugler goes his rounds, and when the bugle sounds, for everlasting, who's he blasting? Our Sergeant Major. Who's gone crackers? Our Sergeant Major. His feet fell up the road, knock-kneed and pigeon-toed. We'd sooner shoot him than salute him. Our Sergeant Major is far away the worst friend we've ever had. When he's far away, well, we're mighty glad. The mascot goat we own, so big and fat has grown, wild and warlike, it's far more like our Sergeant Major.
Okay, feeling good after that. Put on a little George Formby just to show that there's no hard feelings toward our friends over in Britain and my esteemed colleagues who also write Batman, who happen to write him very well and happen to be UK citizens and more likely to get a knighthood than I would be. But nope, hey, no sour grapes here. Anyway, on to another question. What have we got here? Jonesy writes, favorite animated episode that you ever worked on? I don't know if that means animated Batman or animated in general. I don't know. I can't pick a favorite. There are so many of them. I like to think that I haven't written a favorite yet. When I'm done, when I retire, when I'm close to death or whatever, I'll say, that was my favorite. And it'll probably be an old Tex Avery cartoon that I, you know, in a fit of delirium, forgot I never even worked on. And I'll say, yeah, I like that Bad Luck Blackie. I did the layouts on that and also did the voice of the cat. And then it's like, that cartoon was made about 20 years before I was born. So, that's kind of a cop-out. What was my favorite animated thing that I ever worked on? I don't know. All of Batman was really great. I mean, there were highs and lows, but I'd say that was pretty good. You know what? I'm very fond of Over the Edge. And that was because it was an idea that I had one day. And I thought if I pitched it in the room, no one would go for it because we'd already done shows like Perchance to Dream, where a character is sort of, where you're caught up in another character's dream. And I thought that nobody would want to go that place again. And I just thought, in order to sell this episode, I have to write it first. So I wrote a detailed outline and I gave it to Alan Burnett. And I said, here's something I want to do. And he looked at it and he said, whoa, this is good. And then I just handed the outline to Bruce Timm and I said, here's something I want to do. Will you read this and see if you like it? And then about 20 minutes later, I came back in my office and it was on my desk written in red, you bastard, it's great, make it. And so at that point I said, okay, this is going to be great. And then I just wrote the script. And I wrote the script in like 3 days and got it in. It was one of those things that just happened really quick. And the animation came in and it was great. And the vocal performances were really great and really touching. And it was just one of those times where you're in the middle of, I often find like when you're in the middle of production on a series and everybody's kind of really enjoying the process and having a good time and everything's really humming along, that's really when you get your best episodes, is because everybody's got this kind of rhythm going and everybody's shooting around ideas. And so the writers are really inspired and the actors can't wait to get in to play the characters. And especially in animation, you know, like the artists and the designers and the layout guys are just, yeah, I can't wait to do another one. And that's really when you have your best stuff. And hopefully you're on a show that... That feeling can run for years. We were lucky with Batman that it ran for a long time, and we had a lot of great episodes. Let me see. What else? Going back to the questions. That was a rather long. I kind of need Misty here to kind of cut me off in the middle of some of these things. Tower Prep News. I think we got a few of those. Woody Baptiste, Naz Andrique says, Tower Prep News, and I think there's another one here asking. Delisa Javier says, so Tower Prep Season 2, that'll happen, right? Right? Well, we're hoping. I haven't heard any news to date, but as soon as I do know something conclusive, whether or not we're coming back or whether or not we're just stopping at 13, you know, I'll let you know. You know, you'll be the first to know as soon as I know, but that's all I know at this point. So stay tuned. Let me throw on another song here, and then we'll come back with a few more of these suckers.
Talk about me, babe, if you must. Throw out the dust, pile on the dust. I'd do the same thing if I could. You know what they say. They say it's all good. All good. It's all good. Big politician telling lies. Restaurant kitchen all full of flies. Don't make a bit of difference. Don't see why it should. But it's alright, cause it's all good. It's all good. It's all good. Wives are leaving their husbands, they beginning to roam. They leave the party and they never get home. I wouldn't change it even if I could. You know what they say, man, it's all good. It's all good. All good. They tear you down. A teacup of water is enough to drown. You ought to know, if they could, they would. Whatever going down, it's all good. All good. It's all good. People on the land, some of them so sick they can hardly stand. Everybody would move away if they could. It's hard to believe, but it's all good. Yeah. Everywhere you look, there's my misery. Come along with me, babe, I wish you would. You know what I'm saying? It's all good. All good. I said it's all good. All good. We'll be right back. town. Cop cars blinking, something bad going down. Buildings are crumbling in the neighborhood, but there's nothing to worry about, 'cause it's all good. It's all good. I say it's all good. Blew it in your face. This time tomorrow I'll be rolling in your place. I wouldn't change a thing, even if I could. You know what they say. They say it's all good. It's all good. Oh
back, Hobart. Come on. I'm sorry I yelled at you. I mean, you know, I apologize. You want dinner? You're hungry? Here's a wallaby foot. It's really expensive to feed that animal. You keep having to, you know, wallabies are not cheap to buy. I think they suspect us at the local zoo. Every time we go over there, one or two of them vanish. It's getting harder and harder to smuggle them out. Anyway, I think we have time for one or two more questions here. Here's one. Cartoons 1980s, the cartoon crew writes, what was your favorite Filmation show? Okay. Filmation Studios. That was my very first job in animation. I worked there back in like 1980. I got hired while I was still in college to write, premises and cartoons for, Filmation. And at the time they were doing Flash Gordon and, Fat Albert and Mighty Mouse. Mighty Mouse a few years before Ralph Bakshi would get his hands on it and do kind of the cool version of it. But I don't know. It was a good entry-level job. What? I don't understand. Let's see. My favorite Filmation show. The one I worked on or the one just in general? Just in general, I guess I liked Archie the best because that came on when I was a kid and I was reading Archie comic books and I thought, oh man, I'm reading this comic book about these goofy teenagers. Now someone's making a show about them. Isn't that serendipitous? And I remember, you know, as a kid, I would watch whatever was on and I kind of liked Archie better than anything else because it was kind of funny. And then the next year they came out with Sabrina, the Teenage Witch. And I thought, well, she's sort of cute. The character looks really cute. But now they're doing magic in Archie's world and that sort of doesn't really fit. And if they're going to bring in witches and magic, then they'll probably bring in monsters. And yep, the next year the Groovy Ghoulie showed up and that kind of torpedoed the whole thing. Even though, yeah, I've always liked monsters. So it's just sort of like my world of Archie is him getting, you know, chased out of the house by Mr. Lodge every story, or, you know, the girls are always mad at him, or Reggie doing something stupid or something like that. And once you start bringing in fairy tale aspects and monsters and things like that, the whole thing falls apart. But yeah, I guess that first season of Archie I liked better than anything else that Filmation ever did. It was fun to work on Masters of the Universe, though, when that first came out. Nobody knew that the show was going to be that popular. I actually saw on the internet, somebody's doing a documentary about the creation of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe and how these guys who work for Mattel are now fighting for credit on the thing, which is real funny. That's sort of like, you know, aren't there other things to fight, you know, over the credit for? But I guess these guys all worked at Mattel or in licensing, or they all had their hands in He-Man back in the concept in some way in the early 80s. I can tell you now, my side of the story is they had this property that they wanted developed as a show, and myself and Art Nadel was kind of running the story division at that point. He was a TV director, And there was a guy, Robbie London, who later got into animation production. And I think Tom Ruger was involved in it early on. Like, he was sort of freelancing at that time. But I remember we got in this development that didn't make any sense. It was just terrible. It was like bad Sword and Sorcery warmed over, and then we took it and we had to redo it. And then we wrote the first few episodes, and then we got in Larry DiTilio to write some episodes, and then Michael Reeves and Joe Straczynski came in, but that was after I had gone. I had about a year of He-Man, and I said, that's about enough for me. I'm moving. I think I moved back to Boston around that point. Anyway, that was the early days of that, and we saw the toys, and it's like, are kids going to buy these? Because every other kid we saw was playing with Luke Skywalker action figures and Boba Fett, and, you know, Star Wars was still new and coming out, and all the kids were into those. But the guys at Mattel had this theory that, you know, if you make the characters big and solid and chunky, they fit in a kid's hand. And so one guy said to us, it really fills a kid's hand there. It really fills them up, you know, so a kid's got something. And I lobbed one of the ones across the room at one of the other writers, and I said, yeah, and it hurts really bad when it bounces off your brother's head. That's why I would play with this toy. So they put us to work on that, and we were writing them. And one of the things we always laughed at was how cheap the toys were. Like, they really made these to hack them out really quick, because He-Man had the same exact body mold as Skeletor, as all the other male characters. It was the same musculature, the same armbands, the same furry, weird-looking ski boots and everything. And Teela had the same body model as Evil-Lyn and every other female character they did. They just changed the accessories, and then they redid the heads. So it must have been a very cheap line of toys to put out. And they were actually making jokes about it. And I remember the day they came in with this one figure called Faker, which was like a miscolored He-Man. They were saying, this is Faker, and we're doing him, and we're ripping ourselves off in advance, because we know that when they produce the figures, sometimes the others, overseas, they'll take the mold and they'll make their own characters. So we thought, rather than somebody rip us off, we'll rip us off ourselves. And so here's our alternate mutant version of He-Man. And I thought that's kind of clever, because, you know, in that way they're kind of doing their own Bizarro. And I remember actually in the room saying, so he's Bizarro He-Man. And they said, well, don't use the word Bizarro, because we don't want any trouble with DC Comics. He's not Bizarro. He's not Bizarro. He's Faker. Faker. Not Bizarro. Bizarro's a dirty word. And then walking around San Diego Con, Hobart, you know what I saw? Yes, that's it. At the Mattel booth, they have a two-pack where they actually packed up Bizarro versus Faker. And so you can buy this thing now. You can buy it as a limited edition. Yes, indeed. And yeah, I couldn't believe it either. But I got to go online and get me one of those, because that's the one Latter-day He-Man thing I would kind of like to collect, just to say that, you know, at some point everybody eats their words over this stuff. So as far as the lingering creation of who created He-Man, I did. It's all me. Yeah, no. Anyway, that's about all the time we have for today. And, I have as much right as anybody else, I would say. Anyway, and I'm going to get exactly what everybody else gets, which is a big zero. In fact, actually, that is one contribution I did make to He-Man, is when they were designing the sidekick character Orko, I suggested to the artist, why don't you put a little O on his little, you know, nightgown there, or whatever it is he's wearing. And the artist said, oh, like O for Orko? And I said, no, for zero, to show what we're going to get off of the residual money for this thing. We're creating this shit, and they're going to make millions, and this is our little statement. Here's what we're making. We're making exactly bupkis. So some people have accused me of being hostile toward He-Man. I don't know. Maybe I just get a little cynical about it sometimes, but it actually was, you know, kind of fun working on it in those early days. Anyway, that answers that, and I think that's about it. I was kind of stalling here, hoping that Misty would show, but apparently she's still off in Magic Land, so I think we're going to wrap this one up. So for myself, Paul Dini, and for Hobart, Rashi's pet Tasmanian thylacine, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
This has been another episode of Radio Rashi. If you've enjoyed this episode, let everyone know by leaving a review in the iTunes Store. It's a great way to help others find us. You can also leave comments on RadioRashi.com, Facebook.com/RadioRashi, or follow us on Twitter at Radio Rashi or at Paul_Dini to leave us questions. Thanks for listening, and tell your friends.